You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are recording at the LCMS convention in Phoenix, Arizona. We had the opportunity at the convention to meet the founder of Lutheran Heritage Foundation.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can learn more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Robert Ron. He's founder of the Lutheran Heritage Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Also joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Matthew Heise. He serves as Executive Director of Lutheran Heritage Foundation. Thanks for joining us today.
Always great to be with you. And wearing KFUO socks.
And wearing KFUO socks. Always representing.
Today is Thank the day.
You. Thank you for being wonderful partners with KFUO. And to get to, you know, we often, Pastor Heise, we share updates of what's going on with Lutheran Heritage Foundation. We're going to do that this week as well. But I really wanted to go back and get the story of how this all began. Dr. Ron, where did it all begin for you? When did you first become interested in mission work and this translation work that LHF does?
Well, I was working with God's Word to the Nations Bible Society, and we were putting out a revision update of the Beck Bible. Mm. And had the opportunity on several occasions to travel to Russia and to note that the Russians, just before the wall came down, there was a lot of interest in learning English as a second language. And when the wall came down and we went to Russia to help restore Lutheranism, because it had been dormant for almost 70 years because of the persecution of Russian pastors and the people of Russia, Lutherans, and so we felt that perhaps we could help restore Lutheranism by, first of all, publishing a side-by-side edition of the New Testament, Russian-English, and take that and distribute it. Because there was a lot of talk when the wall came down about freedom. So I said, well, let's test freedom in Russia. Let's go to Red Square and let's have a Bible distribution. So October 31st, 1993 was Reformation Sunday, actual Reformation Day. We were in Moscow. We attended a church service at Trinity Lutheran Church, which had been restored by building a small chapel next to the big cathedral, which had been turned into a warehouse. Mm-hmm. And after the service, we traveled to Red Square, and we had a truck that delivered the Bibles to Red Square, and we were there distributing the Bible and Russian tracts and so forth, and was going very well until two policemen came, and the policemen, of course, were asking some questions, and we had Konstantin Komarov, our chief Russian translator, with us, and I told him, you're going to have to talk to him because I don't speak Russian. And so he took the two policemen off to the side, and we continued to pass out Bibles and tracts. And pretty soon the policemen came walking by. They each had a Bible and tracts. And I said, Konstantin, I want to know what you said to them when you spoke with them. And after the event was over, I asked Konstantin, well, what did you say? I said, well, everybody's talking about freedom. So I told him that real freedom is found in this book. If you read this book, you will find out what real freedom is. And so they took up on that, and Konstantin was able to share the gospel with them, and that was the episode that really was the only opposition that we had, except for two Russian Orthodox priests who came walking by, and the Bibles were all distributed by that time, and handed tracks to them, and as they went along, we noticed that they tore up the tracks and tore them threw them on the ground. It was the only opposition that we had as we entered mission work in Russia and noted the freedom that did exist, gave us the opportunity to begin to work with the few Lutherans that we knew and to translate and publish. So that was the beginning of the work. Prior to that, of course, my last year at God's Word to the Nations, I traveled into Russia, actually with the head of the National Religious Broadcasters, Dr. Bert Dornbos, and his counterpart from Holland. And we visited various states that were part of the Soviet Union. If we went to Belarus, we met the president of Belarus, who was very interested in what we were doing. We made arrangements for him to come to America to talk about religious opportunities that were available. So this was the beginning of Russia work. And of course, one of the difficulties was that even if we translated something, where's it going to be printed? Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody was a printer. As opportunities opened up in Russia and people knew what we were doing and we were asking about printers and so forth, they would say they were able to print our materials, and but they didn't know anything about printing. They would be brokers, so to speak. And just so happened that I ran across a guy by the name of Gil Lindsay, who was in Belarus trying to establish a print shop. He was from one of the southern states here in the United States. He's a good Baptist, and so we kind of partnered and agreed that if he got his print shop established, we would provide some business for him. And so that's where we finally ended up doing our printing with Gil Lindsay, who just died this year. We published various works, and one of the first books to be published in Russian was little volume that was a summary of Walther's Law and Gospel with the title God's Yes, God's No. And that was the first Lutheran book published in Russia by Lutherans in 70 years. And so we printed too many copies, as we did with all of the books. Early on, we were printing like 10,000 copies of a volume, and there really wasn't the call for 10,000 volumes. But we had a distribution system with various centers where the books were stored and so forth and distributed. But it wasn't until we got really connected with the Ingria Lutheran group of Russia that we had the outlet for the books that were printed. And of course, that's it was an interesting situation, because we would have people who were in charge of distribution, and it didn't seem to be working very well, and we ended up with a lot of books in storage. And one time with the Ingrian connection, I said, I think we're going to have to burn some of our books, because we can't get them distributed. And that word got to a guy by the name of Leif Camp, and he became very agitated and said, don't destroy him. I'll find a way to distribute him. And he's been our chief distributor in Russia ever since. And so that was some of the early work that an avenue that opened up for us to get our books distributed in, throughout Russia. And it's mainly through the Ingria Lutheran Church. Even though we knew the bishop of the Russian Lutheran Church and the German division of it especially, but they were not too interested in what we were doing. But the Ingrian Church became very interested, and we had storage places that were sponsored by the Ingria Lutheran Church and so forth. So the work expanded throughout the Baltics, went to Ukraine, went to Latvia, to Estonia, Lithuania, and it's interesting, even to Finland, and all of those areas. I guess I'm one of the last ones, because all the bishops that I worked with have passed on or have retired. There's all new bishops in every one of the Baltic Lutheran centers. But that's part of the history, and it was from our work in Russia that our work expanded to different areas of the world. Because of Macedonian calls, they would hear about what we're doing, and we received invitations to work in different countries of the world.
What have you learned about the church, about our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world through all of this work that you've done over the years?
Well, I learned that the difference between Lutherans in the United States and in many different countries of the world about commitment. Mm-hmm. And it's through hardship and persecution, trials and tribulations that the Lutheran developed into a group that was very proficient in their religious belief because of the persecution. And seems like persecution is very evident, there is where the Lutheran Church grows. Mm-hmm. And Matt could tell you more of the expansion of the Lutheran Heritage Foundation in various countries because of the persecution that has taken place, and the faithfulness of those Lutherans and the commitments that they have in spite of it.
We're talking with the founder of the Lutheran Heritage Foundation, the Reverend Dr. Robert Braun, as well as the Reverend Dr. Matthew Heise. He serves as Executive Director of the Lutheran Heritage Foundation. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50 plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are talking with the founder of the Lutheran Heritage Foundation, the Reverend Dr. Robert Braun, and the Reverend Dr. Matthew Heise, Executive Director of the Lutheran Heritage Foundation. We've talked about how it began and how it started to grow. What are some of the challenges you faced as you continue to grow Lutheran Heritage Foundation to bring Lutheran materials to people around the world?
Well, the biggest challenge is always to find capable and faithful translators who can convey the truths that we're trying to translate from the original languages, into the original languages from English. And that's probably the most difficult part of the work. I mean, the opposition that we have seen is very minimal. We know how to work around areas that might provide problems. I guess I could say that the only real physical abuse that we ever received was in St. Petersburg, Russia, when we were attacked by not a group of Lutherans, but a group of gypsies that tried to steal our backpacks from us, and we fought them off with swinging our backpacks at them. And I guess even though we work in hazardous areas, we've never had a problem with any kind of a physical difficulty in persecution. So that's the most difficult part, is to find the personnel, especially if there's no Lutheran church. And we have been in a number of areas where there's no Lutheran church. And after having found printer translators and getting books published, avenues open for a Lutheran church to be formed. So,
how have you seen God's provision in all of the partnerships you've been talking about, learning new things, overcoming challenges? How have you seen God's provision for you physically in doing this work, but also just for the work that you're doing among the people that you're serving?
Well, it's same all over, I guess, you have to search and find the workers that are going to do the work with you. And as I said, if there's a Lutheran presence, it's not so difficult to find capable translators and workers. And we're not so ambitious now in terms of the number of books that we publish. We have a kind of a process where we might publish only a few copies and get some reaction to the translation before we publish them in a greater number of volumes. And we're publishing now more like maybe 2,000-3,000 copies of each book that we translate. And then as they are distributed, and if they're supply is exhausted, we can republish. So that's been a change in our philosophy of publishing and printing. So
you developed partnerships around the world with printers and translators. Tell us about developing the team, the staff that you have, and what that looked like, developing a team of people who could help make this happen to further those relationships with partners around the world.
Well, as the organization grew, of course, I didn't know what the response was going to be. And as we saw that this was something that was needed in the church because of requests and so forth that were coming, then we began to recruit more workers. And it wasn't so too difficult to find people that could serve as helpers and as translators and reviewers, and also opening offices in various parts of the country. We don't have an office in every country, but we may have offices for regions and so on. And so it was a matter of finding Lutherans, if possible, to serve as our staff overseas, especially. And we normally don't have a lot of full-time workers. It's lots of times it's part-time people who can translate, view. We might pay them by page or instead of salaries and so forth. So we tend to use the church leaders, if there's a church, Lutheran church there, to give us leads and tell us about people who might be capable to serve with us.
Tell us about the things that you've been able to translate, some of the original key resources that you've been able to translate over the years. What are the things that have really made a difference for the people you've been serving?
You'll get some information in terms of where we have published interesting volumes, like Iceland and Italy. It's opportunities that come without us looking for it. As I said, the Macedonian calls just keep on coming. We've been, I think we're in 186 languages now in over 100 countries. So it's been a spreading opportunity of the gospel.
What are the first books? What are the first pieces when you're that you translate when venturing into another language?
Well, the first volume might be a little booklet that I wrote. It's called Jesus Never Fails. It's a gospel tract, and this is a little volume that is given to a translator to test the ability that he might have. And from there, we go into the main volume that we publish, I suppose, would be the Catechism. And we would translate just the Enchiridion at the first, and then eventually publish and translate the whole Catechism and go to the Large Catechism. And another volume would be the Child's Garden of Bible Stories, very popular for children. And so those two volumes, I guess, are the initial volumes that we would publish in a language as we start work in a specific country.
And I have both of those in Portuguese that Dr. Heise gave me when I told him I was studying Portuguese. He's like, oh, I have resources for you. So I've seen those in Portuguese. They're wonderful resources for those language groups.
Well, there's many languages where there are resources available, and people don't know it. And so we appreciate the time on a radio program where we can talk about it. And because it's becoming more evident that the immigration is a situation which brings people to this country that we don't just have to translate and publish in a foreign country. We have to provide the books and materials in various languages for pastors here in the United States. That's been a new phenomena, I think, in the last 10, 15 years. At first, we never really worked in that kind of a field, but it just that has also grown as our organization has grown.
Dr. Heise, tell us about your involvement. How did you get involved with LHF?
Well, you know, we talked about the Red Square situation, or the event there back in 1993. 1994, I was commissioned by this gentleman sitting next to me at Guardian Lutheran in Dearborn, Michigan, to go as a volunteer missionary because LCMS World Mission was sending ESL teachers. And so my task was to go to Moscow State University and teach there. And as Dr. Ron told you, we had that bilingual New Testament in Russian-English. And so I actually used that to teach English classes in Russia in 1994, 1995. It's something you could not do today. especially, you know, from a Lutheran organization. Mm-hmm. But we taught English through the Bible because the materials I saw were pretty bad. And I used William Bennett's Book of Virtues, too, if anybody can remember that. So I came over around that time and I connected with LHF. And since I had made good connections to people there, I would teach in a high school and I'd go back in my summers. And the missionary there would allow me to stay at the mission center. And I worked with some Orthodox people in a soup kitchen and so forth. So the Rons always asked me, can you bring back some books for us? So I always say, before I became their executive director, I was their pack mule. And I would meet them at some, maybe some rest stop in Michigan on the freeway there. And I'd give them the books that I got, and they'd have books coming back. So that's kind of how it started with me. But of course, my background was my paternal grandparents were German Lutherans from Russia who came mm-hmm. to America before the Communist Revolution. And so I had always had the fascination of doing that. And so today, you know, in Russia, what Dr. Ron started has blossomed even despite the difficulties with the war and so forth. We are publishing this another edition of the Small Catechism. Of course, our readers can't see it, but I'm showing you this, and you see the number 450. That means the Lutheran Church has been established in Russia for 450 years.
Wow.
St. Michael's Lutheran was built, a wooden church in Moscow in 1576. And, that was the infamous Ivan the Terrible, who, of course, he got that name for a reason, because 5 years after he allowed them to build it, he said, burn it down. And so it had ever been, you know, in the Russian Empire, back and forth, you know, certain amounts of freedom, for other religions and less freedom. But today, what Dr. Ron talked about in Belarus, doing a Bible there, we are reprinting that self-study Bible, and they still have the prints there. So we are doing that in Belarus as we speak. And that will be then shipped over into Russia and throughout the 11 time zones. So the work continues, and that's kind of how I got started and connected to them.
How do we continue to learn about Lutheran Heritage Foundation today?
Well, if you go to our website, lhfmissions.org, you will see a very extensive website that will give you information about publications. We have a newsletter online there, how you can make requests. If you would like a speaker to come to your church, you know, we have our speakers listed there as well. So there's just a ton of information. Even if you're a pastor and wants to go teach in South Sudan at a seminary that we help support, we've got information on that and how you would pack to go to a place like South Sudan, which is very warm, warmer than Phoenix, I think, even now, and probably a whole lot more humid.
Probably, yes. It's been so great to catch up with both of you while we're here at the Synodical Convention in Phoenix. The Reverend Dr. Robert Ron, founder of Lutheran Heritage Foundation, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you. Great to share the story.
But we've been happy to hear it. And the Reverend Dr. Matthew Heise, Executive Director of Lutheran Heritage Foundation. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
The Coffee Hour is a production of KFUO. This program and our station are dependent on listeners just like you. To support KFUO Radio, our podcast, and all the other programming, please make your gift or pledge today at kfuo.org/give and help us continue sharing the good news of Christ for you anytime, anywhere. kfuo.org/give.